They are not of the world, as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. I sanctify myself for them, so they also may be sanctified by the truth. Jesus prayed that we might be unified in his truth, standing firm in the faith and strong in his word. In a world questioning the credibility of God's word, Christ's prayer is for his church to stand firm in unity and his word. This is The Answers Conversation, and I'm your host, Steve Hamm. We'll be answering the skeptical questions of our time, standing firm on the authority of God's word, and rejoicing in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, I'm very pleased to have with us today Joe Owen, who is the Latin Ministry Manager for Answers in Genesis. Actually, Joe is part of my team. One of my major responsibilities with Answers in Genesis is growing the international ministry that takes this message all around the world. And Joe and I work together, particularly when it comes to Latin America and the Hispanic community in the USA. And I thought it'd be really great for us to have a little bit more of an international flavor today as we talk through some of the aspects of ministering to Latin America and Hispanic culture, Latin culture. And so welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. And I want to talk a little bit about really when the Spaniards, for instance, came to Latin America and some of the influences that they brought, and what does that mean for Christianity and different things like that. So, Joe, you know, let's talk through that and get that foundation so we can talk about Latin ministry. So when did the Spaniards come and colonize Latin America?
Okay, I'm going to talk about this at very general terms because there's a lot in history details about this. But I think we need to go back to Christopher Columbus. A lot of people use him. You know, we have Columbus Day in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, he kind of led more to the Spaniards colonizing Latin America. He actually, you know, we landed in about 1492, and he was sent from the monarchy of Spain. And that started a period of about 318 years from 1492 to 1810 of colonization of Spaniards, and of, we know, the Portuguese in Brazil, but Spaniards and mostly Spaniards in Latin America. He did make four voyages to the West Indies, which we know mostly as the Caribbean islands. And the first of these islands, where the first colony was found on an island that they called Hispaniola, or I think you'd say in English, Hispaniola,
mm-hmm.
Which is to the island today is Haiti in the Dominican Republic. That's
okay.
The landmass.
Oh, wow.
And actually, his son, Christopher Columbus's son, Diego, was made the first governor of the New Worlds in Santo Domingo, the Dominican Republic. And in February of this year, I actually got to see his house in the Dominican Republic. It's still there.
Yeah.
And you can still see the forts that they built for the pirates, because they had a big pirate problem as well.
Okay.
Coming in that area. And so that's what started the colonization. We're going to see that it's a little complicated, but I would like to show you two very important points of that colonization here.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And by the way, I'm really looking forward to going to the Dominican Republic with you next year, hopefully see the same thing, right?
Yes.
So that would be great. But we talk often about the conquistadors. And mm-hmm. So, you know, what is that really all about? And is that one of the two things that you wanted to talk about?
Yes, we're going to go into it on that side. That's a good way to go into it. Well, that's a Spanish word, conquistadores, which means conquerors. It literally means conquerors. Conquistar is to conquer. I'm going to focus a little bit more on Mexico, but it's kind of the same thing throughout Latin America. But two missions that they had, that two focused mission was given to the conquistador movement. And I'm kind of explaining that here. But the two reasons why Spain got behind and sent people, and actually the Roman Catholic Church too,
mm-hmm.
It was to extend the Spanish monarchy into the territories and to rule over the indigenous people that they found there.
Mm.
And the second mission was to, quote unquote, convert the indigenous population to Roman Catholicism. At least that's what was used to justify all of this.
Right. I mean, we're probably not talking about convert in the way that an evangelical Christian would talk about convert today, right?
Yeah, I think that's they use the word convert in a wrong way. I think it's more has to do with control. And we're going to see when a person is not converted to Christ, we get into syncretism, and that's something that affects us today and something that we can talk about that will help us share the gospel. Yet another reason why we have to have a historical foundation for the gospel. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see that in this culture, how that affects that. So we talked already about 1492. Well, in 1519, mm-hmm. with this two-slated mission of territory for the Spanish monarchy and conversion to Roman Catholicism, not to Christ, Hernan Cortes, in 1519, he pulled into a beach in Mexico of what's today what we call Veracruz. Mm-hmm. And when they got off the boat, they met with some indigenous people, and the indigenous people were bragging about the Tenochtitlan, the capital of the Aztec Empire, and saying, you know, kind of like when you in the Bible, you see people knew about Solomon's great wealth and
right.
something kind of like that. They wanted these strangers to show off, you know, their huge capital city, mm-hmm. With about 19 million population in the surrounding areas. That's the estimated population, historians say today. And so through a few weeks' trek, Hernan Cortes and a small group of men with a friar and also a priest made a journey with some indigenous people they found all the way to Tenochtitlan, which is today is Mexico City. Mm-hmm. We were just there a week ago.
Yes.
So you've got to see some of that history.
Mm-hmm.
And but on the way, they also made friends with some rival tribes that would later be very key to mm-hmm. taking over Tenochtitlan. Because when he arrived, they met the emperor, which his name is Moctezuma II. And now this part I'm about to tell you, I don't know if we can back this up 100% historically, but most people agree with this, that there was a legend in Aztec beliefs that pale-faced people from the east were going to come, and there were gods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if I 100% agree with that. That's why I'm very careful about saying that,
right.
that they even had that. But that's what a lot of people teach. You even learn that in public schools.
Okay.
And so when Moctezuma saw Hernan Cortes and his men that were more pale in their skin shade, they thought that was the fulfillment of that prophecy. And so they gave them gold. They just gave them everything they wanted. And this small group of men actually kind of took over. And because of a problem that occurred with some other indigenous people, that was blamed on Moctezuma, and he was put under house arrest by the conquistadores, but still on friendly terms, kind of like Paul in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't chained up. I think he was only did have chains, but he wasn't like mistreated like in a dungeon,
right.
like you would think is more house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And this next part is really important to understand what's going to happen. Hernan Cortes was actually got himself in trouble with Spain, and so he had to go leave Tenochtitlan and go to the coast and wait for a ship of Spain to come because they were almost going to, like, try him for treason or insubordination, actually, and I don't exactly know why. So when he had left, the man he left in charge had already put rules on them about they're no longer to do human sacrifices, and they're starting to shatter their idols and put up crosses and shrines to Mary, or as they called her, the Virgin Mary, and the places of those idols that they had. And that's when syncretism started,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah. So let's just explain syncretism just yeah. for a moment, because really this is what we were talking about when conversion is not conversion, when one religion just takes on the face of another.
Yes. Yes. The outer, it looks like something else. It looks like what we would think of Christianity or Roman Catholicism in this case.
Mm-hmm.
There's no conversion of the heart. Idolatry just changed the idol from one to another.
Right.
But it's still idolatry because there's no conversion of the heart.
Yeah.
In front of the one true God. And
right.
when Cortes was taking care of this on the coast, they started a religious ceremony, and they said, you're okay to do this, just no human sacrifices. But there's a lot of fervor going on in the ceremony, and people started, I hate to use the term, but people started using the restroom on top of the Templo Mayor, because they were in a fervor and almost in some kind of a zone. They didn't even know what they're doing, it seemed like. And Cortez's men saw that as hostile, and they started killing them. They sealed off the temple and just slaughtered a whole bunch, every priest they could find on top of this. And then so when Hernan Cortez came back, he and Moctezuma tried to restore peace, but the Aztecs rebelled and fought back and even killed Moctezuma. But eventually, the conquistadores, with the help of the surrounding tribes that they had made friends with that were enemies of the Aztecs, defeated the Aztecs, took over, and built a cathedral, made that Mexico City, and that's what we see today. And that temple, I've stood in that temple. It's in Mexico City between the cathedral and the presidential palace right now.
So how were the conditions during that, during then the colonial period?
So that's kind of the big boom in the colonial period, you know, for mostly from Mexico. So, and this time Spain and also France kind of came in and just started taking gold and silver from the mines. And the conquistadores were granted what are called encomiendas, which are these large parcels of land, and they're kind of just made like king over this land automatically over everybody who lived in it, and they owned everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the soldiers, the Spanish soldiers, were given land tracts, smaller ones or little plantations called haciendas. You probably heard that term before.
Yes.
Or we say haciendas. It's kind of like, think of a plantation in the old South in the United States where you have a whole bunch of people working for you. Some are slaves. Some are more like indentured servants.
Right.
And they were given that. And so, and then on the coasts and in the Caribbean and in Colombia, South America, some African slaves were brought, but the rest were like indentured servants of the indigenous people. And the African slaves were used a lot in the sugar cane field.
So during that time, there was really an aspect of classes that started to appear, right?
Yes, and you know, whenever something like that happens, you start getting different hierarchy of different classes. Especially with the indigenous people, they were very noble, a large group. Because of diseases, they went from that 19 million down to about 2 million. And so they lost that power in numbers. Mm-hmm. And so they're a lot easier subdued by the Spaniards. So you had the highest class. The highest class were the Spaniards, of course, and their hierarchy they made up. Next were the criollos. And I think in English we would call that creoles, which we don't want to confuse that with the French in Louisiana and the States.
Right.
But the criollos were Spaniards that were born in the New World, and they had certain rights.
Mm.
They had almost like the rights of the Spanish military personnel. They were kind of given an hacienda and control over a lot of people. And then you had the mestizos. The mestizos, which people who believed in races said that was the formation of a new race, and that's the mix of the criollos with the indigenous people, or as they call them, Indians.
So here's we got to finish up this conversation. We're going to follow this up with a follow up next week to really talk about why the message of our ministry is so important there. But already we're starting to see by the formation of what is happening in Latin America that there really isn't an understanding of the biblical picture of humanity.
Very correct. And so to a lot of people, when you share the gospel with them, there's a lot of baggage there. And they falsely equate that with abuse in the past. And because they don't understand the biblical Christianity, they understand the superpowers that carried a flag that had a cross on it.
So in Latin ministry, we're going to talk about next week why the message of one race, one blood, and understanding Genesis 9 to 11 and Babel and all of those different things help us to reach out to the Latin community with the gospel.
Yes, yes. Like I said, again, another reason why we need a historical foundation, or we share the gospel as well. It's my opinion against yours.
Thanks, Joe. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you.
If you want answers on this or any other subject, visit answersingenesis.org. That's answersingenesis.org.